Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, December 15th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ahead, I speak with singer-songwriter Joe Pug inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Christina talks to Arkansas wilderness photographer Tim Ernst, plus our Sunday morning montage and more.
But first, just want to take a couple of seconds, really, to remind listeners that we are at the tail end of our year-end fundraiser, and the reason why we can bring listeners programs like Weekend Edition that we just heard and like This American Life that are coming up is because of listeners' support.
Yes. For 4 days, Tuesday through Friday, we were on the air asking listeners to call in with their year-end gifts, or their tax-deductible year-end gifts, I might add. We had some phone volunteers Tuesday through Friday answering the phone, taking your pledges, but we have sent them home. And over this weekend, we just wanted to remind people that you can still give. If you meant to give during the week and just got busy and didn't know what to do because the phone volunteers have gone home, well, you're in luck. We have a website that is always open. So we're letting you know that supportkuaf.com is open for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That's right. So if you have yet to make your contribution to KUAF in 2013, please do so now. And I do want to say thank you to everybody that contributed during the week and over the weekend to this year in fundraiser. So thank you.
Lake Atalanta Park, east of Rogers, is a popular spot for residents to play, picnic, and fish. City planners, however, say the park is antiquated, so they are planning to renovate and expand it. But naturalists, who've long inhabited the park, worry some of the expansion will disrupt the local ecology. So the city staged two focus groups this week for feedback. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended one to bring us the story.
Despite Tuesday's snow-packed roads and freezing temperatures, several hundred people attended two Lake Atalanta Park renovation focus groups, including a noon session at Embassy Suites in Rogers. Residents crowd the conference room to study poster concept boards and provide feedback to planners standing by. Lake Atalanta, an impoundment on Prairie Creek, constructed in 1936 by the Works Progress Administration, was named after a benefactor who donated the land to Rogers. Creeks fed by Frisco Spring, a primary water source for Rogers in the olden days, and Diamond Spring, both producing an estimated 2 million gallons of fresh water per day. The outfall from the dam drains into Beaver Lake. David Hook is Facilities Development Manager for the City of Rogers in the Planning Division.
There is a dam, of course. The lake itself is surrounded by about a 2-mile road that's a one-way traffic for most of that. There are amenities such as playground equipment, just playing in the creek. There are some pavilions for rent. There used to be a restaurant, skate rink, things of that nature, but those were torn down. They were antiquated. They were torn down back in February of this last year. And we have a clean slate to work with now.
Much bigger slate, because the city this year purchased 100 acres of new private property contiguous to the park at a cost of nearly $700,000.
That brings the total up to 236 acres for the park itself. So that gives us a lot of opportunities we didn't know we would have even 2 years ago.
New parcels will better connect the park to downtown Rogers and provide room to create more recreational trails.
This is a combination of bike trail and hiking trail. The intent is to allow access to various areas in the park that would not typically be accessible. These are up on the hillsides. The extent of it is about a 3-foot-wide dirt trail that's cut into the hillside to allow people to actually ride through or hike through and enjoy more of the property. So the 12 miles seems like a lot, but when you look at 236 acres, it actually equates to impacting only about 2% of the park.
Only a quarter of the lake is presently accessible, so the city plans to increase that and improve the lake hydrology by removing 34,000 tons of sediment.
We will dredge the lake. We're working through the Corps of Engineers right now, getting a 404 permit and trying to get permission to dredge the lake, put a boardwalk down approximately 3,000 foot of the edge of the lake. Right now, the lake is only accessible by about 25% of the lake. And so what that's going to allow us to do is give citizens access to the lake itself, more areas to fish, more areas to just enjoy the water. And so that's a huge benefit. That'll also serve another purpose in that we're providing a trail separate from the road that will circumvent the entire lake. It'll be a paved and connect to the boardwalk itself in various areas. And so you'll have vehicular traffic and pedestrian and traffic separate and apart from each other, which is a safety issue of concern voiced by various people.
The park's main entrance on Walnut Street can get congested, so that will be improved, as well as creation of a trout pond on that site where Diamond and Frisco Springs converge.
Part of the goal is to realign it slightly to make it less treacherous, allow for some turn lanes, and raise it up slightly so that we can allow for pedestrian traffic underneath instead of crossing on top of the road. Part of that project is to be able to keep sediment, rocks, things of that nature, from washing from one of the springs, mainly one that goes off to the southeast, into the lake. So part of this is we'll build a forebay upstream to allow water to drop out. This new pond will also allow some of the sediment to drop out before it extends through the creek and into the lake proper.
Project funding will come from a mix of sources, David Hook said.
We believe that the total cost is estimated to be somewhere between $15 and $16 million total. What we have allotted for is $5 million has been dedicated from a bond that was passed back in 2011. That's on the parks side.
Rogers City Council recently approved a matching grant provided by Walton Family Foundation for $3.8 million to begin design and construction of a skate park and more than 12 miles of trails, contracting with Progressive Trail Design based in Fayetteville. One trail will be a wild meandering path, the other a multi-use thoroughfare for cyclists and hikers.
We want to take this back to what it was meant to be, and that's a natural park in the middle of a beautiful city. Very few cities have a 236-acre park with a lake right off their downtown. And so this is a huge amenity for the city, and we want to make sure we do this right.
And so does a growing list of concerned citizens who say the city's moving forward too quickly with limited public participation. Rogers Mayor Greg Hines did appoint a special committee 3 months ago comprised of city staff, chamber members, and 3 residents, Hook says. But Grimsley Graham, a retired Rogers High School teacher, says that's not enough.
We're afraid that the ecology of the area has not been emphasized as much as it should be in the plan or protected.
To better site infrastructure, the city spent $5,000 taking inventory of Lake Atalanta Park, hiring noted botanist Theo Witzel with the Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission. His findings will be interpreted with new signage on the park.
He has identified 5 very sensitive areas in the park that contain rare plants and other features. Unfortunately, the plan that we have seen from the city runs bike trails, 12 miles of bike trails all through the park, and I think they transgress on all 5 of those sensitive areas. So what we're concerned with is that, we're certainly not opposed to the whole plan. The city's done some good things, and their intentions are good, but they have not consulted as many area residents as they should or area experts on the fragile ecology of this area, and we've got to protect some of it.
Critics say the trail will disturb wildlife, for example, ground nesting wood thrushes, and erode delicate karst geology. Grimsley Graham says he and other concerned citizens have formally requested City Council to agree to the formation of an advisory group as an adjunct to the planning committee. No action's been taken on the request. Rogers resident Joan Reynolds has led wildflower and bird walks on the park.
And it's just wonderful that it's so easy to access and easy to see all these different types of birds that nest there. Some of them just come in for the winter. And the wildflowers there are amazing, and there's some really rare ones there too.
190 species of birds on Frisco Spring Hollow alone, migrant eagles, osprey, breeding barred owl, red-shouldered hawk, Louisiana water thrush, eastern phoebe, sedge and marsh wren, orange-crowned and chestnut-sided warblers, and various waterfowl and others. Reynolds is also concerned about the proposed trout pond off Walnut Street, saying it will impede flow utilized by both native and migratory birds and destroy beneficial plant populations.
And another interesting phenomenon that happens there every summer, at the end of the summer when the ruby-throated hummingbirds start to migrate through, that creek is just lined with jewelweed that attract the hummingbirds. And so you can just sit there and watch dozens of hummingbirds just kind of jockeying for position and eating and resting and eating. And it's really a spectacle that everybody needs to see.
City of Rogers lead planner David Hook says the pond, which may or may not contain trout, will be localized and not impair the ecosystem upstream. Plus, any trails will be carefully sited. Steve Glass, Director of Planning and Transportation for the City of Rogers, says while staff will incorporate citizen feedback into their strategy, he's confident the current footprint is very light.
Well, most of the information that we're trying to get today is going to be for the stuff down at Lake Atlanta, the boardwalk, the concrete trails, the restrooms, the playgrounds, where the gardens, we want some reflective gardens and those type of things. The hike and bike trails and the single track, it's going to be up in the hills. It's not something it's not going to be very visible. If you've been to Slaughter Pen, you can kind of get a feel for it.
That 14-mile-long Slaughter Pen mountain bike trail east of North Walton Boulevard in Bentonville features log rides, drops, jumps, bermed, and wall rides, attracting bike enthusiasts and their dollars from across the region. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Tim Ernst is a Fayetteville native who first visited the Buffalo National River in high school. In college, he started his own photography business. But it wasn't until much later that Ernst combined his love for the two, publishing his first picture book of the buffalo in 1988. He has since released years of calendars, various trail guides, and 14 picture books. The latest, Buffalo River Beauty, was released this fall and is the subject of Ernst's presentations currently occurring across the region this winter. Last month, Ernst visited Fayetteville and stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio for a conversation. He began by saying that though he has been photographing the same locations for decades, he can go back to the same location 50 times and still not get the perfect picture. He's different, the equipment is different, and the lighting is different.
From a photography standpoint, a photograph is just light. It's capturing light. And no 2 days are exactly alike. And Hawksbill Craig is a perfect example of an icon that I think Neil Compton probably made famous back in the 1960s when he first photographed it. And that's one of my favorite subjects. But every time I go there, it's different. It is so different. And there are three pictures of Hawksbill Craig in the new Buffalo River Beauty picture book that I took this past year. And people, ask me, well, gosh, you must have taken everything there is to shoot there. And it's like, no, I've really just started shooting pictures of Hawksbill Craig because it's always different. And I keep going back to places like that, as well as a lot of other places on the Buffalo, because they are different every time I go there. And I don't think I've taken the perfect picture of Hawksbill Craig yet or of Roark Bluff. Yeah, there's still, I hope I get to go back there many more times. And the Buffalo River itself, of course, is an ever-changing landscape, not only throughout the seasons, but it's still a pretty young river as far as being wilderness. But the National Park Service took it over in 1972. And, that's very young as far as the current management style of the river. And it's going to look different every year from now on and every generation. It's even the rocks, I find they look different in different light from year to year, staining on them. Water levels obviously fluctuate constantly.
Well, you say that, and I know, like, gray rock It was always, you know, just...
It used to be a monster that was terrifying people,
yes,
and now it isn't.
Right, yeah. Right. And now, and I'm like, what was that, Grey Rock?
That's right.
That was Grey Rock, really? You know, yeah. So I understand what you're saying, yeah.
The river is very fluid. It's, mm-hmm, you know, it's a living being, and yeah, certainly, you know, everything else is around it as well. That's what I go in search of with my camera, is to try and capture as many of the different personalities of the river and the surrounding area as I can, and then try to get there when the light is magical.
Well, you mentioned that there were three pictures of Hawksbill Crag in here. Mm-hmm. Do you just wake up one morning and say, okay, I would really like to catch Hawksbill Crag at sunset?
Sometimes it is very much spur of the moment. In fact, most of the time it is. And a lot of it is just looking out and seeing what the light is doing and saying, I've got to go here or there or someplace else. There was a place that I went to, the last picture that I took this fall. We had a very spectacular fall color season. But because I was doing workshops and starting doing these programs, I didn't get to get out and shoot much. And I was on the river, and I knew that there had to be something there, and I just started splashing upstream and working my way up river. But it wasn't until 2 or 3 hours later that I had basically given up, when I turned around and the sun broke through the clouds and lit up these trees, which then their reflections were in the pool of the river, and the rocks that were gathered around were glowing, that reflected light from the trees. It was a very magical scene. But it's not one that I went there specifically to photograph. It's just one that happened, and I was lucky enough to be standing there when it did. And
you mentioned happening upon that moment. I was looking at your website, Facebook, and saw a picture of elk. Mm-hmm. I mean, a herd of elk, mm-hmm, in the river. How did you capture that picture? I mean, they were like 20 elk.
Yeah, that's a big bull elk and his harem of lady friends. And we were actually, that was quite by accident, and that's literally a snapshot. I was down there with a friend of mine taking pictures of fall reflections in the river, just kind of like I described previously. I was just going upstream looking for things, nothing in particular. And we were shooting reflections in the water, and all of a sudden we heard splashing and turned around, and there these elk were gathering into the middle of the river. But we both had the wrong lens on to shoot them with. So we had to scramble to put a different lens on and turn around, and I took three pictures, and they vanished. The first picture, the bull elk was looking away. The second picture, he turned and looked straight at me. And the third picture, they were all turned and running the other direction. So that was literally a serendipitous moment. And very lucky that I was able to get the right lens on fast enough and get the picture
taken.
And that
was just one of three shots.
That was just one of three shots.
To boom, boom, boom.
That's right. Yeah. And normally when I shoot pictures of something that's more static than that, I might shoot hundreds of pictures before I get one that I'm happy with. And sometimes I don't get anything I'm happy with.
This book, there are probably, what, 200, 300 pictures?
124.
Okay, mm-hmm. Well, my guess was a little off, but okay, 124 pictures. How do you choose those 124 pictures?
Well, that's a tough part of the job. We're in a cycle where I'm doing a new picture book each year, and I usually shoot 40 to 50,000 pictures for each book. And so that's 40,000 to 50,000 pictures a year. And a lot of times, I mean, I wait till usually May or June to sit down and cull through them. And I sit down when I first start the editing process, and I look at every single picture I took all year. I mean, thanks to digital technology, you know, I can see 100 or 200 at a time on the computer screen, and I can go through them pretty quickly. And at the end of that day one, I end up with maybe 200 or 300 pictures that get flagged as potentials. And then the next day, I go look at them with a fresh eye, and a lot of them are similar images, and I try to eliminate those. And it's pretty easy to get down to maybe 150 for 120 for picture book project. But getting rid of that last 15 or 20, it's more difficult. And it's not because they're all incredible pictures. It's just that, you know, by that time, I'm in love with all of them. And because each one of them probably means something to me. It's a special moment that I had out in the woods. And, you know, oh, I don't really want to leave that one out, but I've got one just like it over here. And it's, you know, so it's tough getting down to that. And I mean, I could probably put together many books from every year, but I think only doing one and cutting it down from 50,000 to 124 hopefully makes it a better finished product and gives people more of a, you know, an overall view of what I really want to present to them. I mean, I could do a book and I have before of just waterfalls or of, you know, just fall color, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. There's so much great natural beauty in Arkansas that I could continue for years and years and years, and I hope I do, being able to get out and produce picture books of Arkansas.
How long have you been doing calendars?
We did our first calendar back in 1992.
So the 2014 calendar then will be the 22nd? Yeah, I guess.
No, the 14th.
14th, 92. Oh.
2002, I'm sorry.
Okay,
you're
like,
right.
Wait, hang on. So 22 years.
We did our first calendar in 2002.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And so when you choose pictures for those, I mean, are you winter for January and fall for October? I mean, just kind of the...
Well, that's the way I normally do it, mm-hmm. Although sometimes, you know, those are difficult to pick because pictures going in a book, you know, you leaf through it, and it's not something you dwell on. A monthly calendar is on your wall for a month, mm-hmm. and you know, people, you know, the greatest picture on the planet, half the planet isn't going to like, and you know it's difficult to pick stuff. And sometimes I will pick things for July when I know it's hot and miserable, and I put an ice picture or a snow picture in July because it gives or a picture maybe. And I think in the new one, which I will bring you a copy, the July photograph, I think either July or August, it's a very blue picture. It has a very cooling effect to it. And likewise, in the wintertime, I still try to have a winter scene, but I like for it to be warm colors sometimes. And so it, you know, it kind of warms your heart on a cold winter day. But go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, yes, as we record this, it's November 2013, and mm-hmm. I have my, you know, my November Tim Ernst calendars hanging on my wall. Little, I don't know, push there, I guess.
But, well, thank you. And that picture was actually taken in the late summer when it was very hot, and that's at Pea Ridge National Military Park, which is my nod to veterans. But I like it for this time of the year. It's not blazing fall color, but it's a nice warm sky, and you know, certainly on a day like this, it's welcoming. But the reason I did that one is because of Veterans Day in November.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, so here's a picture of pine cones in this newest book. I mean, mm-hmm. is this? It's, you know, probably, I don't know. As we've learned, my judge of numbers is not very good. 25.
It's a whole bunch of pine cones.
Did you just walk up on this?
Well, that's actually a picture that I have hunted for years. I've done pictures like that of acorns and rocks and dogwood berries and stuff like that. But I always wanted a pine cone one. And it wasn't until this year that I just literally stumbled across that. And that's just, there were literally hundreds of pine cones that had kind of collected in a depression. And from this great big giant pine tree. And that picture, I didn't arrange all of those, but I did remove some of them and kind of got down to that layer of them. And I've always loved pine trees and pine cones, and I just love the graphic nature of things sometimes. You know, you look at that, there isn't a central subject, although it's kind of funny. Whenever that comes up on the big screen during a program, it's usually a 12-foot wide screen, what I see is one of the pine cones looks like a walrus because there are two pine needles sticking out from it, and it just looks like walrus
when
teeth
it's humongous,
to me.
Yeah.
And so that's what I see when I look at that picture. But I love pattern pictures like that, and I do spend a lot of time when I'm out looking down, looking for things like that, you know, whether it be fall leaves or pine cones or rocks or whatever. I find great beauty in detail in the woods. I mentioned about the Buffalo River in Arkansas having a lot of intimate beauty. And, you know, if you look close enough, there's so much really neat stuff that a lot of people look past it. And photographers do, too. We all love to get a wide-angle lens so that we can get everything in. Well, the problem with that is when you get everything in and you put it on the page of a print or a book or on the web page, everything becomes so tiny and so diluted that you know, I much prefer to get a closer view of something to where you isolate one subject or a pattern of subjects like the pine cones and try and eliminate everything else. So while I still do wide-angle lenses, I try to pick one subject and get in really, really close to it, which you can do with a wide-angle lens. You can get just a couple inches away from, say, a wildflower, and then that wildflower looms very big and very powerful in the foreground.
Favorite place in Arkansas?
Favorite place in Arkansas would have to be my cabin with my wife. We spend a lot of time sitting out on the back deck just not only enjoying each other, but we actually see a lot of weather coming through from our vantage point. And it's really neat to see big storms. And there's a lightning bolt in here that covers a full page. It was just really dramatic.
And was that from your back porch?
That was shot from our back porch. We actually, at a distance, we can see the thunderheads that make their way down the Arkansas River from Fort Smith to Clarksville and chugging on down there. We can see the tops of those thunderstorms. And when there's a lot of lightning in them, we get quite a lightning show. But there's also a picture or two from the book of the canyon down below us that we can see that's filled with fog. And it changes every day out there in the woods, and every day is special. And so, you know, as far as an actual point, that would be it. As far as a region, Buffalo River, certainly. As far as the United States, Arkansas. I've spent a lot of time photographing in a lot of other places in the United States, and I find Arkansas the most rewarding photographically on a year-round basis.
Well, because your back porch is not a public place, and I can't just go sit down on your back porch, and our listeners can't just go sit down on your back porch, what is the most underrated place maybe that you photographed that we can go check out, that we can go see through maybe the eyes that you've seen it through?
Well, I think as far as underrated that pertains to the Buffalo River, you know, the icons like Hawksbill Creek and Hemden Hollow and places like that, certainly. But, you know, I think you can go anywhere on the Buffalo River, get out of your car, put on a pair of wading boots or sneakers, and just walk upstream or walk downstream. And I do that frequently, looking for pictures. And I think that the Buffalo River, in particular, with its twists and turns, or really any small creek even, we have so many here in the Ozarks, that you just get off the road, even get off the trail, and just stomp up and down the creek, and you'll find just a lot of really incredible things. Again, a lot of this intimate scenery. And I've done that with hundreds and probably thousands of streams, and, you know, I've just scratched the surface of what we've got here in Arkansas. So there are just so many places where you can get out and see really spectacular things without being in crowds of people.
Well, and for those that perhaps can't get out to go see these things, you do give presentations, and you still do have some coming up in our listening area and throughout December. Why do you give these presentations?
Well, we try to give 15 or 20 presentations each fall in November and December. They're all free and open to the public, and we really encourage folks to get out. Just like we just came from a program across the street at the Fayetteville Library, and there were 125 people there or something like that, and it was a packed house. And I think seeing this program, especially with the dramatic music and everybody's reactions to different things going on, makes it almost an intimate experience like the Buffalo River is. And I think that people get to share that, and they see the pictures 12 feet wide, and it makes it very special. And that's part of what we want to do, is bring the great beauty of whatever our project is to the people up close and personal, to where they can enjoy it to its fullest.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was a great pleasure.
Yeah. Tim Ernst is an Arkansas wilderness photographer. His photographs have appeared in hundreds of national, regional, and local publications, including National Geographic, Audubon, Backpacker, Reader's Digest Books, and The New York Times. To see if Ernst will be in your area to present his slide presentation, visit timernst.com/slideprograms. Last weekend's program in Bentonville has been rescheduled for January 18th at the Bentonville Public Library. This is Ozarks at Large.
LOL.
What happens?
Let's do when technology starts to change our language.
Lol, let's do this interview via text. Lol.
It would take us like forever to do this by text.
Oh, lol.
I'm Guy Raz. Spoken and unspoken stories from the frontiers of human communication. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Stay tuned to KUAF. TED begins at noon on 91.3 FM.
It is Sunday, December 15th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And I'm tired. How are you guys?
Tired. Tired's a good word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really wanted to sleep in.
Did you look up and figure out how close Christmas is?
I don't know that I looked up to find out, but I am aware, and I'm not exactly pleased with it.
I am terrified. Mm-hmm. But if you're still looking for the Christmas spirit, as I have to admit I am, it is that time of year when the Nutcracker is dancing all over the place. The one in Fort Smith that wraps up this afternoon is kind of fun because Antoinette Klimek, who was a student dancer as the Sugar Plum Fairy, is back as a 30-year-old professional dancer for Western Arkansas Ballet playing a role.
Oh, fun.
And that's kind of fun. She's been dancing in Tulsa, I believe, and is now home dancing. No, I'm sorry, she recently moved to Phoenix. Graduated from the University of Chicago, has danced with University Ballet of Chicago, so that's kind of exciting. And a little girl named Audra Bonneau, who is 15 and a sophomore at Southside High School, is playing Clara in this production, and she's been dancing since she was four. So how exciting for her to get to dance with the little girl all grown up.
Oh, yeah.
That'll be fun. And it wraps up at 2:30 today at Arkansas Best Performing Arts Center in Fort Smith. Tickets are $15 to $25. And if you can't make that one, oh, we've got some more.
What? I don't believe you.
Moscow Classical Ballet's Nutcracker is at 7 o'clock on Friday, 2 and 7 on Saturday, and 2 next Sunday at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $32. And the Northwest Arkansas Ballet's Nutcracker wraps up at 2 o'clock today at the Arend Art Center in Bentonville. And then if you're looking for some more Christmas spirit.
Yes. Okay, I need it.
I do need it.
I do need it.
Do tell.
Judy B. and Jingle Bells Batman Smells, Trike Theater at 2 o'clock today at White Auditorium at Northwest Arkansas Community College. The Little Mermaid Jr., not really Christmas season. That might be a nice break. Mm-hmm. Presented by the Academy Players at 2 at Breedlove Auditorium at UAFS. The Sound of Music, also not quite Christmassy, at 2 at the Lyric Theater in Harrison. A Christmas Carol, the new adaptation by Morgan Hicks, presented by Theater Squared, is at 2 and 7:30 today at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. Fully Committed wraps up at 2 o'clock at Rogers Little Theater. And the Best Christmas Pageant Ever wraps up at 3 o'clock at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
Lots of Christmas. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This month, December, is the end of the year, but it also marks the 80th anniversary of when Prohibition was repealed here in the United States.
That's right. The 21st Amendment repealed Prohibition, and I am really glad that that happened because it's Sunday morning, and Sunday brunch is just not quite the same without
mimosas.
Without a mimosa.
True. Very true. And in honor of that, this month, that historic moment, it was the inspiration for the montage this week, which you put together.
I did, yes. So here is our Sunday morning montage with clips about Prohibition or booze, just in general, from movies, TVs, and songs.
Bring the cocktail shaker.
Oh, sugar. You're gonna spoil my surprise.
Hey, honey, what's that?
Party in Upper 7.
Oh, party. I'll get some cheese and crackers.
I'll get a cocktail shaker. You get a corkscrew.
Okay. Hey, Rosilla, there's a party in Upper 7.
Yeah?
You got a corkscrew?
No, but Stella has.
Well, go get some paper cups.
Okay.
Hey,
how she'll be nice to you.
Isn't that just like a wop? Brings a knife to a gunfight. Get out of here, you daggle bastard! Go on, get your ass out of here!
Rye whiskey makes the bad sound better, makes you baby. Makes herself taste sweeter. Oh boy, rye whiskey makes your heart beat louder, makes your voice seem softer, makes the back room hotter.
You live in the cottage across the lawn. I tried to buy it once. I've been trying to find you, but I'm afraid I'm not a very good host. Truth of the matter is, I don't much like parties.
I looked down the bar at the bartender. Said, what do you want, Johnny? One bourbon, one scotch, and one bill.
Are you trying to shake me down, Henry?
I'm just the messenger here, Forrest.
Have you met Howard?
You gonna shoot me, huh?
Money and my money on my mind, yeah, rolling down the street, smoking.
Mr. Mayor, fellow members of the City Council, in less than 2 hours, liquor will be declared illegal by decree of the distinguished gentlemen of our nation's Congress. To those beautiful, ignorant bastards.
To see how you did on our Sunday morning montage, that was in honor of the 80th anniversary of the 21st Amendment, which repealed prohibition. Just go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, he was named Time Magazine's Man of the Year. But did Pope Francis set out to be the most retweeted pope in history?
It's more like stories about the pope tend to go viral than the pope himself kind of conceiving some master plan in the Vatican to get everyone to retweet him.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Listen this Sunday at 11 a.m. to KUAF Public Radio.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Austin-based musician Joe Pug says he had never been to Fayetteville prior to last year, but since last fall, he's come to Northwest Arkansas 3 times. The first time was to open for James McMurtry at George's Majestic Lounge, and the second time included a performance on the 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival main stage. Most recently, he returned to George's last month to headline an intimate Monday night concert. While he was in town, he stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, he discussed why he moved to Chicago, the place where his professional music career began.
I dropped out of college and I wanted to move. So I knew I couldn't move back home to Maryland where my folks were because I didn't want to go back there with my tail between my legs, you know. So I had to strike out and I had a buddy that lived in Chicago who just moved there. And so I knew that there was a couch I could crash on. So that's what I did. I just moved there, and within a week, I had a job, and I had a room I was renting in, like, a group house. And that was before, you know, I even called my folks to let them know that I had dropped out. So I just moved there to move there. I didn't move there to play music. I just had to move somewhere new. That's all.
So where does carpentry come in? Because I know you were a carpenter for a while, and that doesn't seem like something you just pick up.
Yeah, well, my dad was a carpenter.
Okay.
And you know, I was never a very good carpenter. I mainly just grabbed coffee for and cleaned up after the good carpenters, and that's kind of what I did for my dad too. But you know, I could frame a wall. I can do a few things, but I was never very good.
Did your dad have his own company? Did he make you help him out as
a
kid?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd go and help him out, but he was pretty. It wasn't something that he wanted me to follow in or anything like that. You know, he was a musician before he did that. Basically, till he kind of had me, I guess. And when he had me, he had to get serious and make some dough. So he started building houses, but it was never anything that he, you know, wanted to be carried on as a family tradition or anything like that.
So what kind of musician was your dad? What did he play?
He was a piano player and a songwriter, and he played, I mean, it was just straight up rock and roll bands. You know, their heroes were the band. Mm-hmm. And so they, a lot of their records sound a lot like that.
Did he teach you to play anything?
He taught me my first couple chords on the guitar, and he taught me a lot about music. He played all that old stuff for me, the band, John Hiatt, Oren Zevon, and he really introduced me into that, you know, the great culture of the American troubadour.
So at what point did you switch from carpenter in Chicago to musician mm-hmm. in Chicago?
Well, I was always doing the music thing at night and the carpentry thing during the day, and then the financial crash of 2008 came, and that really, I mean, all the work dried up in Chicago carpentry-wise, and I just released my first album by coincidence at the same time, and it was starting to get some good press, and we had the opportunity to play some shows based on that, and so it was strange. It was a very natural transition from having less work in the carpentry realm and having more work playing music. And that was 5 years ago, and I haven't had to swing a hammer since, which, I, you know, it's a good thing.
Well, moved again to Austin in 2010, 2011?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Why Austin? Because I would imagine, but at that point, you would have picked up, you know, developed a fan base there in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And
I was just ready for a move. I like to move around. I don't like to stay in the same place necessarily too long. And I didn't want to move to Nashville, and I didn't want to move to Los Angeles, so I ended up in Austin.
Why not Nashville? Why not Los Angeles? I mean, I understand these are all musical cities.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wanted to move to a musical city, but Nashville was a little too... they take the songwriting thing, like, so seriously there, like almost to a fault. Like, I think, you know, it's this big psychological thing of, like, you know, of writing and writing with other people, and like, it, to me, it really kind of sapped the joy out of it. The idea of that kind of sapped the joy out of it. And I got a lot of friends that live in Nashville and love it. Don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to bag on the place too much, but you know, songwriting for me has always been a personal thing and a thing that is supposed to be the whole joyous part of the endeavor, and I just never wanted to codify that in the way that I felt like I'd have to in Nashville. And then Los Angeles was just too far away from my family in Maryland. I couldn't make the mental lift to just be on opposite coasts from them, so Austin it is.
So with songwriting, are you necessarily opposed to writing with someone else?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, for myself, I am. Mm-hmm. I just don't...
You don't work that way.
Yeah, I just don't work that way. I think you have to make so many compromises in the rest of your life, you know, personally and professionally, that the writing part is the one place, like, where I don't want to make a compromise with somebody else. You know, I want to I want to do this my own way, and I feel like if someone else has a really good idea for a song, I'm not really going to do anything for them. And if I have a really good idea for a song, I don't want to share that with someone else. I just want to do it myself, you know? So I'm a big fan of other songwriters, both from earlier generations and my generation. I listen to a lot of them, and I'm a fan. But, you know, I just don't... I wouldn't want to work in that other way. You know, and some people do, but that's not me.
are there certain themes that you try to stick to in your music, or is it just kind of all over the place?
Well, I mean, I don't really censor myself as to what I'm writing, but I will say that I do finish a lot of stuff, and I say to myself, well, that's an all right song, but it's not a Joe Pug song right there. You know, like, I think that there is a very specific voice that, that, you know, this name lends itself to, and that people kind of expect from it, and that I expect from it. And so, you know, I keep all those other songs. I don't know whether they'll end up, but yeah, I do toss away a lot of stuff to say, no, that's not in the voice of this project here, you know.
So what is a Joe Pug song?
It's it'd be kind of hard to describe, but, you know, like, there's a certain narrator's voice that, like, wouldn't use certain words even, you know, like, I would never use, like, and I couldn't tell you why, but I'd never use, like, the word computer in a song, or I'd never use the word, you know, it's just different words that are just not in that voice, that I would just never. And I don't know, it's just kind of an intuition thing as to what works and what doesn't.
Fair enough. Well, you brought your guitar. Can we hear a Joe Pug song?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to.
Perfect.
Son, it's been so very long. I know that you're here to surrender the disappointing days I suffered at your age were more than I'd care to remember. Before you throw the towel and turn your engines out, don't expect to spit all that you tasted from your mouth. After all you've seen, the most you'll hope to be is pretending to be a pretender. The years that I've been through, a gentle few who say that they love and they mean it. The others that I met, they're decent folks, I guess, but all that they love is achievement. The swagger and the dress, the trappings of success, the butter and the milk of what it takes to get ahead. Any given night, catch them dead to rights, painting their name on the ceiling. Remember in the end that many of your friends rather be dead than uncertain. They want a simple yes, or even better yet, a promise the next life is perfect. I promise that it's not, but then what have they got? Only 50 years, they never gave a moment's thought. Anyone they find who tells them otherwise, they'll follow him backwards and shirtless. Welcome home, my son. It's been so very long. I know that you're here to surrender.
That was Austin-based singer-songwriter Joe Pug inside the Firman Garner Performance Studio. He stopped by KUAF while he was in town for a performance last month. You can find more information about the musician at joepugmusic.com.
On the next Fresh Air Weekend, Robert Redford. He talks about his life, his films, and trying to work outside the Hollywood system. He's just won a New York Film Critics Circle Award for his new film, All Is Lost. Also, we talk with actor Michael Sheen. He starred in Frost Nixon, played Tony Blair three different times, and is currently starring in the Showtime series Masters of Sex. Join us.
Tune in for Fresh Air Weekend, Sunday evenings at 6 on KUAF Public Radio.
A few notes here. A memorial service for the late William Harrison will be held this afternoon at 4 at the Fayetteville Public Library with a reception to follow. Bill Harrison was a co-founder of the Creative Writing Department and the Masters in Fine Arts program at the University of Arkansas, as well as the published author of several novels, short stories, and screenplays. The community is invited to attend.
The Lowell Historical Museum will host a come-and-go open house for the public December 20th from 5 to 7 p.m. Come enjoy an old-fashioned Christmas as children from the Lowell Elementary School will be singing at 1 p.m. as an early event to the open house. Then the Breaking Silence Band will perform at the museum from 5 to 7. Santa will give bags of candy to the children on a first-come, first-served basis. For more, lowellarkansas.gov.
The folk duo Still on the Hill's annual Good Folk Winter Concert at the Fayetteville Underground that was last night sold out, so they decided to add a Sunday afternoon matinee this afternoon at 3. This special show will feature a host of unique handmade Ozark instruments made by various makers and the songs that go along with them. For more information, 479-409-1224.
Stephen Bias and the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra announced the Christmas with the APO concert December 21st at 7:30 p.m. at the Arend Arts Center in Bentonville. Enjoy one of Arkansas's greatest collaborative musical holiday celebrations, featuring Grammy Award-winning soprano Leona Mitchell, the Ozark Bronze Handbell Ensemble, and the University of Arkansas Children's Choir. For more information, arkansasphilharmonic.org.
And we mentioned these Christmas concerts, which reminds me that it is the season of giving.
It is.
And we have a giving tree in our lobby. We're asking listeners to bring in non-perishable food items in addition to lightly worn or new clothing items.
Yes, and proceeds will go to the Outback program at the Fayetteville Public Schools. We did receive quite a few donations during the Ozarks at Large Christmas show at the public library earlier this month. Thanks to the library for hosting, and thanks to everyone who attended and made those contributions. If you were unable to make the show, because I think it was the evening before that lovely ice storm kind of hit our area,
yes.
You can hear portions of that be broadcast on the December 24th editions of Ozarks at Large.
Yes. Season of Giving. This past week, Tuesday through Friday, we had an on-air year-end fundraiser. And the fundraiser is continuing, while not necessarily on air. We are on air, but we don't have volunteers here answering phones.
No, but if you wanted to make that contribution all week and just never got around to it, you still can. We have this thing called a website that has open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you can go to supportkuaf.com to make your year-end tax-deductible contribution there.
Right. We're inviting anybody that has not yet given in 2013, or maybe you've never given to KUAF. Now is an excellent time to do so. As you mentioned, it is a tax deductible gift, and you just have a couple more weeks to get those contributions in to claim them on your 2013 taxes.
Yep.
So yes, the website is supportkuaf.com. And thank you to everybody who's contributed so far. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
You'll be back tomorrow with an all-new daily edition of Ozarks at Large.
I will.
All right. Thank you so much for listening.